You're listening to Filling Seats, the State of Enrollment Marketing in Higher Ed, hosted by StudentBridge. In this podcast, you'll learn what's working to grow, shape, and sustain enrollment at colleges and universities directly from fellow enrollment marketers, thought leaders, and ed tech innovators. Listen in for proven strategies to fill seats this cycle and beyond. Welcome to episode 5 of Filling Seats. In this episode, you'll hear from Judith Stockman, the Assistant Dean for Graduate Enrollment at American University College of Arts and Sciences. You'll hear Judith talk about how an ongoing collection of data guides their ability to recruit, how her private sector experience shaped her view on enrollment as a consumer product now, and how analyzing data has revealed critical insights on their student population. Let's meet Judith.
I've worked in education since 2022. Oh my goodness. So I've spent the last 15 years in the public sector, but I started out in the private sector. So I have MBA from the Wharton School in the mid 90s, and I graduated from Brown University in the late 80s. So I've been around for a minute, but I started in the private sector doing marketing, and I worked as a consultant for a number of years. So I've been in a kind of a consultative selling role for most of my career, but I've worked in financial services. I worked for HBO and Showtime. I did a little media work. And then I got married, a bit of a cliche. I moved to the DC area with my husband who works in banking. He used to work on Wall Street, and I wanted to do more mission-driven work. Education has been transformative in my life. So I knew that I would want to probably do something education related at some point. So I lived in New York area for a number of years, moving to the DC area. And I had just had a child. It was a time for me to, I could switch gears a little bit. So I wanted to use my consultative selling and marketing background in a more mission-driven capacity in education. The opportunity to work in admissions in terms of education, I had an opportunity to do that. And it just seemed to be a really good fit for me. I started out promoting an MBA admissions, and I was basically promoting general management education to prospective MBA students. And since 2015, I've moved to the College of Arts and Sciences, where I'm still kind of selling education, but it's to a more of an arts and science graduate community. And so I lead a small team where we do admissions and recruitment and operations for over probably 50 different graduate programs. And our job is to go out and find the students. I do some marketing, but I do partner with the university marketing. We have overall marketing for the university. Then every school has a marketing communications department. So my job is mostly program marketing, but I do work with the marketing communications team in building brand awareness and program marketing for our over 50 graduate programs.
What are some of the most popular programs? What are the ones that are struggling that you're, having to sell the hardest?
The hardest, yes. So when I worked in the private sector, right, then I did MBA admissions, which is a professional school. So it kind of mimicked a business background. So people who were interested in an MBA and how to sell that particular degree was pretty straightforward. Arts and sciences is a little trickier. My undergraduate work was in English literature and creative writing. Then I went to business school, and people always think that was an interesting turn of events. But I was attracted to arts and sciences because at my heart, I feel like I'm a writer and I love to read and I love literature. But it is a tougher sell, or a different kind of sell, a different kind of opportunity to market the humanities and the sciences to graduate students. So that was a learning curve for me. The first couple of years here were just, these aren't hungry MBA students. These are scientists and writers and sociologists. So learning that was a bit of a challenge. But the hardest part for us, for me, and I think for a lot of leadership in the arts and sciences, is that graduate degrees like sociology and anthropology, it's not clear what the career track is. And getting a PhD is not the only option for it. There was a time where if you were getting one of the masters in sociology, you were en route to a PhD in sociology and you would teach. That is not as viable a path for a lot of students. So the hardest part of this job for me is developing value propositions for some of those softer degrees, the creative writing and the anthropology and the sociology and the literature. Why should I study this program at this university at this time? So developing kind of personas and value propositions and career paths for some non-traditional degrees, at least from my background, has been probably challenging for me personally, but then where the university is right now, where the liberal arts programs and liberal arts graduate degrees aren't as in demand as, say, economics. So we have to dig deeper to find our students, and we have to dig even deeper to find the right messages to make sure we're saying the things they need to hear in order to choose us for their graduate study. It is an uphill battle sometimes.
So you said 50 graduate programs that you're recruiting for, and about how many total graduate students do you have in the College of Arts and Sciences, and how many are you bringing in each year?
So it varies by program, right? Some of our programs only bring in like 3 or 4 students, and some bring in like over 20. We have over 900 graduate students total across the whole college. And it varies by program, but every year we're charged with bringing in probably close to 250, 300 students. So that's across, that's chemistry, that's statistics, as well as anthropology and art history. All those programs, our team is charged with recruiting. And our role is probably 60% operations, and then 40% recruitment and marketing. The people who apply, we manage that whole application process in conjunction with faculty. We also recruit for all of those programs.
I would love if you could give an example of one of those personas, like who is the person that you're recruiting for the creative writing master's program, or any of that secret sauce that you would be willing to share. I'm just so curious.
Great questions. It evolves, right? So the personas are with regard to overall, what are graduate students looking in a graduate program? And then what are graduate students looking for a specific program? You know, we're in Washington, D.C. Part of our location is part of our value proposition. So we, for an economics program, for example, a persona may be someone who obviously wants to go earn a degree in a major city, and usually a city with a global focus. It's usually someone, most of our econ students are probably 25 to 27 years old. We get some right on the undergrad, but most of them have had some work experience. They're people who have, they're not necessarily political, but they're someone who's interested in world events, someone who's interested in an international footprint that would give them a view to economic issues worldwide that has a global footprint, a school and a program that has connections to someone who's interested in working for the World Bank or the IMF, who wants to work for a global organization would be a persona. Usually we attract people who went to private undergrads because it's graduate program, it's not cheap. So those students are typically come from a private school, often within the Northeast corridor. I mean, we do attract students from all over the world, but a lot of our students are probably educated somewhere within the Northeast corridor and then in major kind of cities across the country. Like we have students from like a New York and a Boston, a Philadelphia, but then a San Francisco and a Los Angeles as well, and a little bit in the Southeast. That's kind of a view of the student who might be attracted to one of our econ programs.
That is super specific and also makes total sense. So I'm assuming that you're using all of that information to then target social ads. Is that accurate?
Yes, we use that information to target social ads. We use that information to recruit, mm-hmm. right? Like we collect a lot of data on, particularly in the last few years, I was able to hire a data person, and we collect a lot of data on where applications come from. And we use that information to really hunt and peck for students to guide us and where's the best place to find these students. And we use that for our marketing initiatives, our social media campaigns, our email campaigns.
You went from years in the private sector to then coming into higher ed. What were some of the biggest takeaways or aha moments or realizations that you had that, oh, this is different?
Oh, so many. I don't want this to sound negative as it would going to come right out of my lips to say, but universities and much of the public sector is a lot more consensus, particularly in academia, is that we love committees. And the more people in a committee to solve a problem, the longer it takes to solve it. In the private sector, particularly as someone, I worked for a lot of Fortune 500 companies, it's results driven. It's about, okay, be clear on the goals, be clear on how you're going to reach them, and then reach them. Otherwise, there'll be consequences. In academia, it's more at the heart of a university are the faculty and the students. So I'm an administrator, so I'm important, but faculty research and bringing students in is a big part of what universities do. So when there are different ideas or initiatives, it can take a lot of time to build consensus to get something done. So that was a big change. And also, I think with universities, this is changing. It felt like it was build it and they will come. Like I came from, I had a marketing and a sales and a consulting background. So I was very consumer driven, very much what is the consumer saying? And let's try to meet that need. With universities, they feel like, well, no, we're here. Yes, we have this amazing faculty and this incredible research. They're doing incredible work. Students will find us. We don't really have to do too much. They'll find us. And maybe there was a time when that was the case. I've been in this business, 15 years now? But it certainly isn't the case now. The whole notion of, oh, we have to do market segmentation. Oh, we have to do research to really find why they want to come to us. Oh, we have to treat them like consumers. What do you mean? I remember I was in a meeting years ago and I talked about education as a product. And I think the faculty's head just spun around. And while it is a transformative product, there's nothing like an education and what it can do for you. The notion of being consumer and market focused was really not a part of the discussion, at least when I first entered this business, more so now. But that was a big difference from my private sector life.
What are some recent wins or successes that your team has seen in terms of marketing?
I've been in this role since 2015, and I kind of built this department. There are some people who weren't here before, but some who are. And what we did is, one of the first things I wanted to do was hire a director of data analytics, which we had someone who kind of did the numbers, but not really. Getting that role established and elevating it was one of the first things I wanted to do, because I wanted to do data-driven enrollment strategy and data-driven enrollment marketing. So that was kind of a little unheard of. So we spent the last few years collecting data. So we know who our students are. We know what they like. We know where they're coming from. We know where their backgrounds are from. We know where they went to undergrad. We have a sense of their sensitivities with regard to different subjects. We've done surveys. So the wins have been developing these personas. And at different points, we did hire agencies to help us. So we haven't done it in a vacuum. But just the notion of, let's go find out about our consumers, our students. Let's find who they are, where they are. Then let's develop messages and advertising to attract them to our programs. So we did that. So I have a pretty good idea across my many varied programs. It's a work in progress, but it's so much better than it was even 5 years ago. I know where to find my creative writing students. Mm-hmm. I know where to find my sociology students. I know where to find my data science and my statistics students. I know what they look like. I know what kind of messages that I can say on my different social media platforms. I know what to put in my email campaigns. I know who to talk to. Those are some wins that we continually enjoy now. And that's through a process we put in place over the last several years, and it's really starting to pay off.
That's amazing. How are you continuously collecting data so that those findings don't go stale? Like, we knew what our student was 6 years ago, but then now all of a sudden that pool has dried up and it's not working for us anymore.
Yeah, great question. Information and data can get old pretty quickly, right?
Especially with something like the pandemic happening.
Yes, exactly. Sometimes it feels like even starting from scratch. So the way we collect that data historically and even now is we do a lot of surveying of our applicant pool throughout the application process, when they are admitted and when they accept an offer of admission. And when they don't accept an offer of admission, they give us information about why they choose us or why they did not, what schools they apply to in addition to our school. We have over 5 years of application data that we collect as part of the application. Like when someone applies, they fill out this application. Over the years, we've added more questions to that application, more demographic questions, which helps inform our decision and our communication plans. So we'll do more of that. I think we'll probably do more. We've tried to upgrade our surveying capabilities and survey students regularly through these channels and others to get an idea of what their appetite is for our programs and where they are in terms of their educational needs. And we're going to start doing that again. We do it continuously. And obviously, the pandemic isn't over, but where it is now, we're at a stage where we can start collecting some of that information again and using that to inform some of our decisions right now as well as in the future.
Are you currently tasked with growing enrollment, maintaining enrollment, or bringing in a different type of student?
All of that. I mean, not so much the latter, not so much for putting in a different type of student. But yes, my job, the team I lead, is responsible for growing the class. And those growth numbers come from conversations with faculty, the dean's office, myself, and what's happening in the marketplace. But yes, we're in charge with growing and maintaining the graduate population. Now, my job is bringing them in, doing the application, the operations part. Once they're students, someone else, they're no longer part of my team. We have enrollment goals every year. And the last few years, goals have been modest. Right before the pandemic, we exceeded our growth significantly, which was great. But just last year, we did not meet our numbers. So every year we meet, usually late summer, and we meet with our leadership and we talk about what we think are the reasonable opportunities for growth. And they were held accountable to those every year.
What is your team currently struggling with in terms of marketing?
Money, resources. We have over 50 graduate programs. That includes certificate, PhD programs, master's programs. And we just don't have enough money to give everybody the love they need. So it's triage. It's my life is triage, particularly from a marketing perspective. Not unusual for a lot of people in my line of work, but our challenge is who do we get? Literally meetings today and last week and tomorrow. We were able to get a little bit more money from the university. We got an extra like $100,000, which is a lot of money for us. And how do we spend it? We have 50 plus programs. Do we spend it on the programs that have growth potential? Or do we spend it on the programs that are already doing well, but we want them to do even better? Do we spend it on new? We're probably going to be doing some hybrid and online degrees. Do we spend it on that area? Do we do brand awareness? We could still benefit from people just knowing the suite of programs that are at American University College of Arts and Sciences. There's a huge gap there. So how do we spend that money is a daily struggle that I work with my marketing communications team and the central marketing. What is the best way to spend that money? And we do have an agency of record that advises us. But in the end, it's our decision to decide where that money goes. And that's a challenge.
And they advise you on enrollment strategy or specifically there for digital ad buy?
They advise us on media strategy. Again, it's a small budget for some of the program marketing. But they advise us on, okay, so you want to build your econ program. You want to increase enrollments in your econ program. These are some of the platforms. And then we talk about, you know, the components of our program, what we think are the main attributes, you know, what we believe the value proposition is and what we'd like to achieve and where the areas. Like we historically get a lot of applications from California and Texas and Maine. So that our advertising company will help us develop a media plan and what platforms are appropriate for the messages that we want to, and help us develop the messages as well, then push them out in ways that they think make the most sense.
We'll be right back.
Want to know exactly how peer institutions are increasing enrollment? Check out three case studies in the show notes featuring three schools who've grown enrollment consistently over the past several years, including a private liberal arts college in Illinois, a small public school in Nebraska, and a large public institution in Georgia. Or visit studentbridge.com/resources to see how other institutions achieve more, like increasing campus tour numbers, engagement, yield, and beyond. I feel like you're a dream client for an agency because you're basically just handing them over like, these are my people and now I need you to go find them wherever they are.
I don't know if they think we're a dream client, but the agency, I have to tell you, supports the 7 different schools. So it can be a little challenging getting their attention. So in that regard, I would prefer to have an agency. I worked at another university and I had an agency just for my school that was like just to solve my problem. I don't have that here. So it is a little bit of a sharing, which is mostly good, but it's we don't get their whole attention.
So what channels are most effective for y'all?
You know, we do a lot of email marketing. And I think with a limited budget, I mean, when we buy media, all direct marketing, email marketing is probably what we lean into the most. We use that. And we used to have an agency that would help, that worked with us exclusively to do email marketing. They would help us buy lists, typically GRE lists. And we developed a microsite and they worked with us almost on a weekly basis. We were sending out different email campaigns and doing different campaigns to attract different people to attract applicants for our different programs. And that was a resource, probably in the last 5 years, the biggest resource for us in generating leads for our programs. Our inquiries doubled up 30% 1 year. We have since, part of it is through cost cutting. We do no longer work with that agency. Actually, we got rid of that agency and started working with Student Bridge, actually, which was a different focus. But those videos have been also a great lead generation for us, which was not the intent when we developed these 12 videos with Student Bridge. And I think the pandemic added to this because students couldn't come on campus and couldn't connect with them like we wanted to. But the Student Bridge videos have been a great platform for us in terms of generating leads in the last couple of years. But I would say that email marketing is something that we lean into heavily. We do a lot of search engine optimization, a lot of SEO work as well. Direct marketing is the biggest bang for our buck. We do a lot of banner ads and things like that to help us with our media footprint. But I think the email marketing campaigns are most successful for us.
I should know this, but my experience is much more undergraduate focused. How has COVID affected the number of GRE test takers?
Oh, great question. It has affected them a great deal. It just made it tougher to take the exam, particularly our international students, right? And TOEFL exams, language exams like that have been decimated. As you may be thinking, the GRE list as an opportunity is not as rich as we would like it to be. When we were working with the agency a couple of years ago, we would refresh those lists pretty much every few months. And we don't do that as much now. We still buy some of the lists on our own without an agency, but the data and the information is probably not current. And so that is something that has created a challenge for us, and we don't lean into as much in that regard, particularly with some of our email campaigns. But the GRE situation has not been good for, I think, a lot of graduate programs. In fact, in the heat of the pandemic, if we're on a tail end in the beginning, a lot of our programs waived it. We wanted to remove as many barriers as possible, right? Like a lot of institutions. So many of our programs just stopped requiring it for admission.
When you look at your competitors and other schools, what are some things that you see that they're doing a great job with?
I think the schools are real successful, and I did a little secret shopping and knowing I'd be speaking to you, but I think those universities who are engaging applicants and people on their website through video content, I think they're doing the right thing. There's some schools that are like really creating these little micro communities on their website. As I said, I went to Brown. I spent some time on their website today, and it created an opportunity for students to share their social media posts on the website, and they're building these communities, like these little mini communities on their website. They're creating connection. And I think schools would do that. And I think video drives that a lot. And I think that is something that we could do better. We're working on. But I think schools who get that, using the videos and social media to tell stories. Good marketing is storytelling. And they're using these vehicles to tell their stories and inviting students to be a part of that story. I think those are universities who are winning in that regard.
What are some things you think other schools could be doing better?
Some schools do it better than others, right? I used to say we were kind of Rip Van Winkle. We've been asleep for 20 years and now we're awake and, oh, there's all these things that are happening. But leaning into technology even more, like texting. Like students like to be grad students. I mean, I work in a grad student space. I know this is true for undergrads as well. I have a daughter who's a junior in college and I have one who's about to go. So texting is where they live. I live with Generation Z and I market to Generation Z. Leaning into finding students where they are, I think universities could do that better. But hopefully I'm not contradicting myself. But I also think that we, and again, the pandemic shook this up a little bit. We have to be careful not to lean too much into social media in place of face-to-face contact. Students still want to connect with you. Maybe current students, it may be an admissions person. In my world, sometimes it's a faculty or alumni, but that the face-to-face contact is still a critical part of a student's decision-making in terms of whether or not they're going to choose your school. Students still want to be engaged. They still want that white glove treatment, which includes connecting to you on a more intimate and personal level. So social media has its place, YouTube has its place, but face-to-face contact is still important to this generation. And I think some schools have leaned too far in one direction and maybe don't quite recognize that.
What are some industry leaders, companies, or resources that you like to follow or learn from?
Not necessarily education focused, some of the resources that I look to, and I think I still probably lean on my private sector focus. And that, what I've tried to do here is some of the learnings and the relationships when I was working in the private sector, I've tried to bring here and learn from some of those experiences. So the lead I follow, I mean, I think Bill Gates has done some great thing in the education space. So I always follow what he's doing. But I read the Chronicle of Education. I feel like I have to do that every day. I look to a lot of, like, I like Scott Galloway. He's a professor at NYU. He's got some very interesting views on education. Adam Grant, I think he's a professor at Wharton. He has some great ideas on leadership. I love this writer at The Atlantic. I think it's Arthur Brooks. He writes on building a better life. I think a lot of those tools and well-being. Wellness is a big part of the where we are today. And students, graduate students want to know what resources are here for them. So I get a lot of insight from those type of leaders. I love the Harvard Business Review. They have great articles on education. The Wall Street Journal has a great section on education that they bring a lot of different articles. And the Post, I read the Post every day. So I start my day with, I'm kind of old school. I don't actually read it on paper, but I do start my day with reading these things. And I find things outside of the education sector help inform my thinking, how to bring this to this sector and learn from it.
If you could change anything about higher ed or enrollment marketing, what would it be?
I think this is less the case than it was 5 years ago, but the whole notion of build it and they would come, that for higher education marketers to not be scared of using some tools from the private sector. I still work hard for some of my faculty to think of students as consumers and to be market focused on how can we meet their needs, as opposed to maybe research focused on, like, they should be interested in what I'm doing and not, I shouldn't be worried about bringing them into the fold. I think most educators are on that path, but I think some of us are slower than others. So I would love for higher ed marketing and higher education sector to think more nimbly, to be more adaptable, to be more leaders in terms of innovation. And some schools are, but it's a lot of times it's been the 2Us and the and organizations like that who are leading this thinking on online learning or developing hybrid models. I think your more traditional university has to think about education differently, how it's distributed, who benefits from it, and just developing more of a market-focused model on how to deliver it to those who are most interested in receiving it.
What do you see for the future of enrollment marketing?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I think some of the tools will probably remain the same, but we're in and moving quickly. The pandemic has accelerated this, but we are moving into hybrid learning models, right? Remote learning is not going away. It was here before, and it's just being accelerated. But what are the tools and the messages that need to be developed for this new kind of infrastructure that's happening within higher education? And the diversity of learners, both in terms of age, background, nationality, and all that, is more than it's ever been. And we want to be as customized as possible into having the right messages to the right people. But how do you do that? I mean, how do you make everyone say the right things to the right people at the right time, with the right information? And these higher education landscape is fragmented in some ways. Learning how to work within this new infrastructure in meaningful ways, in ways that people are paying attention, I think will be an ongoing challenge for us in the future.
Switching gears a little bit, what is an app or a marketing tool that you cannot live without?
I love Google Analytics. It can help us really better understand, you know, what we're doing is working. And I love having access to those metrics and being able to change up pretty quickly if something isn't working. So that sounds kind of geeky, but.
Have you had any major aha moments? Like you saw something in the data and then it was like, oh my gosh, we have to do this differently or this now.
It's interesting how you can lean into old data or old myths. So once we started collecting some data, American University is in Washington, D.C. And I think faculty and others felt that most of our applicants were from the DMV. And the DMV is Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Again, this is graduate school, and it didn't have as national a footprint as perhaps we thought. We knew we had the DMV, and the Northeast Corridor feeds us. Like, we knew we had some footage there. But after collecting some data, it really was a kick aha for me, and I think some of our team and peers, was that no, most of our applications come from outside of the DMV, from outside of Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Like 60%. Now, when the people who enroll, that gap closes. It's more to 50-50. But that changed our whole marketing focus. Wait, you knew a little bit of California, but no, there's people from Texas and people from the different parts of the Southeast and a smattering in the Midwest and who are applying to our graduate programs. And we lose them sometimes when it comes to enrollment. But why? What are we saying? If we get all these people from Texas who start, but they don't finish or they don't enroll, we did a lot of investigating to find out, well, why is that? And are things we can do maybe to get them more attracted to actually enrolling? And even faculty had been here for years. American University is a national school, but I think we thought from a graduate perspective that it was mostly regional, and it is not. And that has changed our focus a lot. Where we go, how we market, what kind of media we buy, where we buy media. That is something that was a little thing that was just subtle enough for us to make some changes.
If you could go back 5 to 10 years and give yourself advice, what would it be?
I would probably say to be more fearless, to do more listening than talking. in my previous role, I worked for a business school and I had opportunity to like travel to India and we went to the Soviet Union once and I was always sending someone else. I mean, I had younger children and I didn't value that opportunity to like literally see the world on someone else's dime. I would have probably encouraged myself to just jump in and be less cautious. And that's probably personally as well as professionally, and be less afraid of something going wrong. And I think I'm at a place where I'm better at that, but I wish I'd gotten there sooner. You learn more. If you're lucky, you learn more, you do better. And I think professionally and in other parts of my life, I was just more cautious to want to make the right decision. And I think here even, and I've had leadership that lets you make the wrong decision professionally, that to try new things, see what happens. And I think the leadership here is amenable to that. But I think it's been a journey for me to get there.
Where can our listeners find you if they'd like to connect with you?
My work email. I'm happy to connect with anyone who wants to, but it's been a good ride for me. So I'm very happy at my time here. And I love working in education. I love having the opportunity to bring students closer to some of their goals, both in professionally and personally. So it's a great ride.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for interviewing with me today.
Oh, thank you so much. It was a great experience. I really appreciate it. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
This is the Filling Seats podcast, hosted by StudentBridge, where we help enrollment teams achieve more by fusing authentic storytelling with industry-leading technology and personalized digital experiences. If you're looking to attract more, amaze more, and achieve more, visit studentbridge.com. To connect with this episode's guest, check out the show notes. If you enjoyed this episode, leave a rating and review, and don't forget to subscribe. For more information about the podcast or to let us know you'd like to be a guest, visit studentbridge.com/podcast. Thanks for listening.